Let's return to our story of Boaz and Ruth, Book of Ruth, chapter 3 today. We know that Ruth and Boaz have been developing a relationship over several months now. They're spending quite a bit of time together each workday. That'd be 6 days a week. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they didn't spend some of the Sabbath together as well, some worship time as well as some relaxation time. Naomi clearly thought that given enough time, Boaz would ask Ruth to marry him. But he doesn't. We don't know why. It appears that he's never been married, so he just might be socially clumsy and has never been able to get past the development of a relationship into a marriage. But whatever the reason, Naomi is not going to wait any longer. So chapter 3, verse 1 says, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you?'" So shouldn't I get involved here to make sure that he asks you to marry him? "Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he's winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." And this is the processing of the grain. Get it off the stalk, away from the husk. Get that chaff away from it so that you've got the good, clean grain that can be stored up for later use. So during this stage of the grain process, you've got big piles of grain sitting around, and you don't want any grain thieves coming in there and helping themselves to that. So you stay out, camp near it, and protect it. So Naomi knows that Boaz is going to be sleeping outdoors away from other people on this particular night. So she tells Ruth this, verse 3, "Wash therefore," that is, come home from work, get all washed up, get clean, "then anoint yourself," that would be with a perfumed ointment, "and put on your cloak," you know, put on some good clothes, "and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." So you go down, kind of stay in the shadows, just watch, wait until he's had his after work meal, and lays down to go to bed. Verse 4. "When he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." Now, this is setting up the opportunity for Boaz to propose marriage in the ceremonial fashion that is required from a redeemer to a widow in his family line. And I've shared this with you before. It involved taking part of the outer clothing that all Israeli people wore that had a little purple fringe or prominence on it. That purple was to remind them day by day that they belong to the covenant of God. And so the Redeemer was supposed to ceremonially put that cloak, that clothing, over the body of the widow and basically take her under his wing, because the clothing kind of had a square pattern to it, and that was referred to as a wing. So he was supposed to put it over her and by that action ask her to be his wife. Well, Naomi is telling Ruth, "You find out where he's going to sleep for the night, And then you go up and fold that clothing of his that he's using for a blanket up off his feet. And then you just lay down there next to his feet and wait. Now, there's nothing untoward about this, nothing sexual involved in this. This is all about a quiet way that she can communicate to Boaz, I want you to ask me to marry you. That's what this is all about. Naomi is like, I don't know why he's not asking you, but he needs to, and you've got to make it easy for him. So she replied, all that you say, I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid down. At midnight, so in the middle of the night, the man was startled and he turned over. So something makes him realize something's not right. Now, what is that? Well, it might be his feet are cold because even though it is summertime at this point, it's a nice warm night in Bethlehem. You went to bed, you know, covered up, and now your feet are uncovered, you're going to have a little bit of a draft. So he might have felt that. Or he might have also realized by the scent of perfumed ointment or oil that there was a woman nearby. Because it actually says in the next part of the line, it says, behold, a woman lay at his feet. And that's kind of a weird thing because he's a single, older man. Why in the world would there be a woman near him at this particular point? So he's startled by all of this. And so he speaks out into the night. Who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. So he hears the exact phrases that Naomi told her to use that indicate what he should have been offering already, and that is a proposal of marriage. The spreading of the wings, that's very similar to the blessing that he put onto her the very first day they met. May you find protection under the wings of God. Well, in this case, she says, I need you to put your wing on me and ask me to marry you. And so he said, may you be blessed by he who is my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in which you have not gone after younger men, whether rich or poor. Now that's another indicator here that he is of that next generation up from her, probably about 20 years older than her, because he says, this is amazing to me that you are not trying to get a younger man to marry you. You want me. And every time I tell this story, I'm very touched by it. Because there is something to be said about Boaz being amazed that Ruth wanted him. When it is clear that he wants Ruth, but never asked her until he's prompted by this situation. So this is a very touching love story from both sides. And I think that we should appreciate it, especially if you find yourself on either side of this sort of relationship where you feel like you'd like to be married to this person, and you sense that they'd like it, but they just have never got around to asking. And so, just go with the emotion of the moment, if you would. Now, He goes on to say this, though, verse 11. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask. For all your fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. So he's an honorable man, and he knows that she is a very honorable woman as well, because of the way that she has come to Israel out of Moab. She's been taking good care of her mother-in-law. She is a hard worker. She's shown that from the very first day that she showed up in his field. And now, it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Now, pay attention to that. That means he knew the line redeeming right. He's checked out the requirements for himself. So he's actually thought about whether or not he could be the husband of Ruth. He's just not acted on it until this moment. But now that she has signaled to him that she would say yes if he asked, he says, we've got one last thing I got to check on. There's one other person that has the legal right ahead of me. Verse 13, you remain tonight in the morning. If he will redeem you, good. Let him do it. Because again, this is a culture not like ours. So they focused very much on this idea of family and on family inheritance. And so arranged marriages happened very often. And so that's really what levirate marriage is about. It's an arranged marriage. And so he says, look, if he'll marry you, that's good, because then you'll have a husband and everything will turn out well. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as he who is lives, I'll redeem you. Yes, I will marry you if this other guy doesn't want to. So you lie down until the morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning. And I doubt that either one of them slept very much that night. Probably each of them anticipated what was going to take place once the daylight hours came, whether or not they'd end up together as a couple. So she lay at his feet until morning, but arose before one could recognize another, so while it's still fairly dark. And he said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. So keep this all under your hat. And he said, bring the garment you're wearing and hold it out. And so she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. So he took 6 some sort of measures of barley and packed that into the garment so she could take it home as a sack full of grain. So this adds to everything else she's saved up. So she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. So it's basically a gift to Naomi to say, I plan on doing right by your daughter-in-law. So Naomi replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. So Naomi's excited, Ruth is excited, and Boaz is also excited. Chapter number 4. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there. Now the gate of the city was the place where a lot of the legal transactions took place. And so there would be officials there that could function as witnesses or arbiters. And so Boaz goes to wait at a place that he knows that his relative is going to come by. So he waited there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, turn aside, Fred, sit down here. So he catches him, catches his attention, says, come on over here. So he turned aside and he sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city. So these are the witnesses that are now going to see the official transaction about to take place, and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down, and then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." So he presents it as a land transaction, that the piece of property of Elimelech, which should have gone to his eldest son, both of whom are now dead, is in the legal custody of the living widow, Naomi. And if this guy wants the property legally to use to grow grain, then he has to pay for that privilege. And Boaz says, if you want to do it, great. But if you don't, I want to take care of that. So he said, I'll redeem it. So yeah, I'd like that property. And Boaz said, well, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. So then he breaks the second part of the deal. He says, okay, but you understand, if you want this piece of property as a single man, because this guy apparently was, you have to marry the widowed daughter-in-law of Naomi, because she is the one that needs to have a baby boy that will then become the legal heir of this piece of property. And see, that's the whole levirate marriage thing, the brother-in-law marriage or the family marriage arrangement. It was to keep the property line clearly defined through certain family trees. And when God set it up through Moses, it was such an important principle that there was a curse attached to it. And you can go back into the book of, I think it's book of Exodus is where this is found, that if the guy says, well, I don't want to be having somebody else's kids, because remember, the first boy of this new marriage is going to be counted as the son of the previous marriage. And the only way that you can then have heirs of your own is to have a second son with this woman. And if you never had any sons, then your family line would come to an end. And for that reason, some people would refuse to participate in the practice because they'd rather somebody else's family line went extinct. So if they refused, Moses said the woman should spit in the face of the guy that refused to marry her and rip his sandal off his foot. And from that point on in Israeli history, that man would be known as the man who lost his sandal, the man who had his sandal removed. And it's got something to do with a Middle Eastern concept of shame that's attached to shoes. And you even see this to the modern day, that people will take their shoes off and shake them at other people. And you might remember in the past, when Saddam Hussein was in power, people were slapping their shoes on his portraits and things. That was because that's a shameful thing. You might even remember that President Bush had some Middle Easterner throw a shoe at him once. And it wasn't that he was trying to peg him with the shoe. It was a sign of contempt and shame toward him from a Middle Eastern perspective. So anyway, that was the intent of this removing of the sandal ceremony. It was a sign that this person is contemptible. Well, during the period of the judges, that lost its importance and just became part of the ceremony. Because look what happens next. Verse 6. So the Redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Meaning, what if I only have the one boy? That's not going to work for me. So take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal. So I just wanted you to see that they've kind of twisted the original intention of the removal of the sandal ceremony. And Boaz is happy that he took his sandal off. Boaz is happy that he refused to redeem the land and to marry Ruth, because he wants to do that. Verse number 9. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and to Malon. Also, Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife. Now, don't misunderstand that. It's not the sense that she's some sort of slave. It's the idea that he has redeemed her out of her widowhood to raise up with her first a son in honor of the Elimelech line, and then his own family as well. So I've bought her to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day. And then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. And then they started giving their wishes, basically good luck, mazel tov, that sort of stuff. May he who is make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. So blessings on you, just like the two wives of Jacob. May your wife, Ruth, be that prosperous. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that he who is will give you by this young woman. And then that goes all the way back to their Judah root line. Judah had children through Tamar in order to keep the Judah tribe moving forward. And so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And there would have been a great big community wedding, and everybody would have come and had the meal and drank and sang and danced, and everybody would have been excited and happy. Naomi would have been right in the middle of all of that, pleasant now, just like her name means, because everything turned out good. You know, and this is a good example. This story is a good example of the Romans 8:28 principle, that God is able to make all things work together for good to those who love him and who are the called according to his purposes. And so he went into her, and he who is gave her conception, and she bore a son. Now, I'm going to just throw my 2 cents worth out here. I don't know whether or not the first son is the one that we'll be talking about here or not. There may have been a previous son that was born in the name of Elimelech and his family that we don't want to talk about, because eventually this story gets around to becoming the story of David's great-grandparents' romance, their marriage. And so we focus on that family line. But when this child is born, everybody is excited for Naomi. Verse 14, then the woman said to Naomi, blessed be he who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. And then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. And they named him Obed. And the name Obed has the idea of serving. And this is the sense that God was serving Naomi, serving Ruth. He was providing for them through this son, because this son will grow up and take care of Grandma Naomi and take care of father Boaz and mother Ruth into their old age. And so he will become their servant as they grow old. And this is one of the sad things about being widowed with no children, is that who's going to take care of you when you're old? So Obed is the young boy that comes into the story at the end. And then he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So the book of Ruth is the love story of David's great-grandparents. And also, of course, the many times over great-grandparents of Jesus the Christ. We finish up the book with a genealogy. These are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nashon. Nashon was the leader of Judah in the time of the Exodus. Nashon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Salmon was married to Ruth, or to Rahab, by the way. Salmon fathered Boaz. And I think there might be a couple more generations in between here that are not listed. And Boaz fathered Obed, Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David. And that wraps up our little excursion outside of the book of Judges. When we come back tomorrow, we will pick up our story with Tola and Yair in the book of Judges.